thank you very much for taking the time today. I really appreciate it. I really enjoyed our tete-a-tete on LinkedIn and the conversation that we had. So I just felt it clicked somehow. And I'm very much looking forward to digging a little bit deeper into that conversation.
Yeah, it was refreshing. It's funny, sales has changed so much over the years. Yeah. And it depends on who you talk to, but they're still living in the 80s and 90s, reading the books that came from the even earlier on, and talk about social selling, and it just doesn't exist in their world because they haven't adapted to the new buying behaviors that, you know, surround us every day.
Well, I think what really stands out to that audience is the word selling and social selling, and the social part of it is being neglected. How much do you talk to, let's say, traditional salespeople, and how much do you talk to, let's say, progressive salespeople?
I'm actually, the psychographics of it is the traditional people think that what they're doing is working until it's not. And so that psychographic that I get is because I put out so much content now and I'm so consistent, finally, and also having the podcast as well, that I don't really talk to traditional anymore because they're not in the right headspace for me to even have a good conversation. But it's this, you know, the SDR, BDRs, full cycle AEs, sales managers that are going, I don't know what to do anymore. You know, what I grew up doing, what I was trained on isn't working. And now my job's on the line or there's pressure on me and I just don't know what to do. So I would say over 80% of who I talk to are salespeople that want something different. And then there'll be the people in between, but they're not interested in changing because sales is change management. I'm not going to go and change your mind. The first thing you have to go into, you know, figure out is why change and why now. And I can't, if those options aren't on the table, and the answer is I don't want to change and it's definitely not going to happen now, what's the point of entertaining a conversation?
It's all about how big is the pain of staying where you are. And how big is the pain of making that change? And it's also, and you're absolutely right, it is a management change, but also I feel a cultural change. So the mindset is different or needs to be different from what has worked 20, 30 years ago.
Couldn't agree more.
Shall I call you Nicholas or Nick?
You are welcome to call me Nick. I'll say this before you put it in the podcast, but I have a trick. When I got into management, I got overwhelmed with email. And so what I did is I have an email filter. And I put myself as Nicholas everywhere. So if you write Nicholas and you have in a sequence or anything, it gets filed in a different spot. But if you write Nick, it'll actually hit my inbox and I'll see it, or else you're waiting until I get to it.
That's a great trick. I've heard a similar trick when you put like an emoji in your LinkedIn profile name, and then you automatically know, okay, is that, did they scrap my email or did they scrap LinkedIn and just put me in a sequence? I like that. I really like that. Yeah. And I was wondering why all small letters, why is this not capitalized? And, you know, it's those things. Well, thank you very much for that trick.
And that's the reason why it's all lowercase.
Yeah. Yeah.
So because LinkedIn, you can't really do that. I wish LinkedIn would take, you know, Microsoft's robust Outlook and somehow integrate it so we have folders. And I don't know what your DMs look like, but it's so hard to stay on top of communication because they make it so frustrating. And even using like account lists and lead lists, that only gets you so far. But it's a horrible platform for communication directly, which is so ironic. So unless you're commenting or connecting, get the heck off of LinkedIn because it's so hard to have a good conversation.
I think it's good to initialize a conversation and to just pop up in someone's inbox and then take it offline, because you're absolutely right. The messaging system that they have in place, I don't know, that's absolutely antiquated and outdated as well. So they need a change of management there.
I've been looking actually for digital transformation work at some of the integrations with Microsoft. So I might have some information for you in a couple of weeks, because I'm meeting with a couple of Microsoft execs to go and discuss, because I'm curious if there's integrations that they just don't share that. I don't know if you've used HubSpot, or I think Salesforce integrates as well. The HubSpot integration with Salesforce, with SalesNav Teams, is actually really nice. And it's funny because it plays to social psychology, because now you get, who do we know that's similar, or what company, like, it builds on those shared interests.
Yeah,
but it's, you don't get any of that until you're paying an arm and a leg for it.
Yeah, and it isn't that frustrating, because that's what I feel LinkedIn should be all about, facilitate 100%. Professional connections and professional networks, and leveraging on what you have already and where it could take you potentially, hopefully without being salesy and spammy and pitchy. That's the other thing that I found that makes me not want to use the messaging as much, because it's just so filled with
epic pitch.
I hate to say it, but it's just one pitch after another. And I have this game that I play. Whenever I get a new invite, I bet how long it takes until I get a pitch.
I do the and same game.
Sometimes it's 1 week, sometimes 2 weeks, but sometimes 2 minutes. And so that's really fascinating. That's like social selling topic that we can discuss.
I call it vampire sales.
Oh, okay. Why vampire? Because they leech off the energy.
You could play on a lot of that, but for a vampire to come into your house, what needs to happen?
And that's similar to what happens on LinkedIn. And I really wonder if people and organizations believe that this works on a larger scale. Finding the needle in a haystack, you might have a win here and there and some traction here and there. You know, on the other side, the people that you just piss off with that behavior and that potential damage in reputation is so immense.
Yeah, you could burn your entire TAM in a couple of weeks if you have sales nav and you're building lists. But think about it. It's commodity sales. They are commodities in themselves. When you spend less than 5 minutes building your account lists and there's no rhyme and rhythm, why the hell wouldn't you get treated as a commodity and only talk about price? You've sold yourself short by not investing into your accounts. How many people can actually quantify the value that they bring to the table in a discovery call or even in their prospecting? Almost none, because they're like, oh, they fit the firmographic fit, size, right area, boom. Who can I call top of the line? Kate, VP of sales, Kate, call, dial. And so there's no emotional connection. There's no effort put in. There's no value established. Most companies should just get rid of their entire sales team and they would actually do better and just focus on customer success. Because their sales team is doing nothing but scorching the earth with bad practices. But it's also like Freakonomics. You look at what they're being judged on and they're doing what they get recognized for. They don't care how they get there. Nobody judges them on how they act. It's a typical hunter scenario. They only judge them by what they drag through the door. Look what I got.
It brings me to one topic that, you know, I was trained on a typical cold calling, typical spin and band methodologies, mm-hmm. like the traditional things that you mentioned early on. And it's just, I feel it's not productive. I mean, it really jumps in your face, the failure rate to success rate, the productivity versus the non-productivity. But still, there are so many sales teams who are pushed to do that from leadership, from sales leadership teams and management teams. And I know for sure from firsthand that a lot of large organizations do that and even outsource lead generation and cold calling and things like that. One of the largest corporations in the world. And you would think that they should be a little bit ahead of what everybody else is doing, but they're not. It's like going back to the Stone Age and is go on the hunt and chase some leads. And I've always kind of felt almost appalled by the language of traditional sales. You know, let's go chase that up and go for the hunt and all this very aggressive.
I feel like the Wolf of Wall Street, where it's just like that aggressive hunter.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And you said it before, and you post about that on LinkedIn as well, that there is this misalignment of how differently people want to buy or have to buy if it's a large organization, and the way vendors and sales is selling. So there's this huge misalignment. When did you feel that there is a disconnect and things should be done differently?
There's a few different ways that this kind of came to be. being my all-inclusive stay in the hospital really reinforced this. When I wore my burnout like a badge of honor and it almost killed me, and I had to rethink my entire life in that hospital while I was healing. But one of the things when I was in investment banking is they had a quota of activity that I had to do per day, and I had to make 100 plus calls. If I didn't have 100 calls, I didn't justify space in the building and I would get fired. And it was a big deal. And it was funny because I'm watching the bullpen and listening to everybody pitching, and you know, somebody get a good pitch, and of course it would go make its way around the bullpen. And there was a lot of wordsmithing, not a lot of actual relationship building. So it sounded good, but at the end of the day, nothing actually happened, but it hit the activity metrics that everybody was joining. And I don't know why, but there's a gentleman that I call it the race to commonality, where you always try to find that common point that we can always talk about. Like for us, we could talk shop all day because we love the psychology, we love the development of sales. So it's easy for us to talk about. You can't do that with everyone. And we got talking about a small town vibe. And for whatever reason, we just clicked and we kept talking. And so just what every day he would shoot me an email or I'd shoot him back an email. And we just kept that correspondence going for about six months. And I trusted him. He trusted me. I knew his entire family. I knew a lot of his friends from an email a day. You know, no more than 5 minutes of my time. He referred me the biggest piece of business that I had ever sold. Over $200 million transaction. And it was done almost on a virtual handshake. I had never met the gentleman. And it was over a year of talking to each other before we finally met. And we had done this deal together and never actually met face to face. And this was before Zoom and everything too. So it made me realize like all these activity metrics, all these things they're teaching are going against human nature. And especially now I talk to all these sales leaders and I was like, so you guys are onboarding and ramping reps to do this. But I see you're on Amazon buying from a self-service portal. Well, yeah. So just to clarify, you want your team to sell in a way that you're not interested in buying. And so you watch people's behaviors. How do they act in the mall? How do they go and act when they're on a website? How do they act on social media? And you realize that we are coming further and further, longer into the equation where they might be 80%, 90% done before they reach out to us or never at all. Because before we were the conduit to information, we were the doctor providing a prescription. Sales isn't about that a lot of the time now. It's not taught that way because it's not repeatable. It's not predictable revenue. They can't mass produce that. That takes a lot of years of training to go and have that working collaboration, those give and take negotiations. So they just default to what's easy and what's trackable. And that is the problem with sales right now. And that's why you could get rid of most of the sales teams and they would produce just as much. But then the only problem is, then the spotlight would be on marketing and we'd have to humanize that as well.
Yeah, you're absolutely spot on. I was thinking along your lines as well. So if we take the focus off of sales and selling, so how can we provide the buyer or potential buyers with everything that they need in order to make a decision to get in touch with us? And so that transparency then needs to go that focus needs to go from sales to marketing, and marketing needs to be much more inclined and intertwined with sales than ever before, because sales and marketing both have individual KPIs traditionally that have grown over the past decades that don't really match and you don't really map them. So marketing, for example, okay, what's the KPI? How many leads do we generate per week or per day or per month? And that's it. That's all they focus on. And sales, of course, is about how many calls do you make? How many touch points do you have? How many meetings have you booked and so forth? And I read a very good post from Refine Labs, which I'm pretty sure you
Chris know Walker about. Is breaking yes. ground there for sure.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely brilliant. And that post was basically advocating to change the KPIs across these departments, across sales and marketing, to focus on revenue. So marketing's KPI is not lead generation anymore, but it's revenue. How much revenue can you help generate? And I found that very interesting, because now marketing is in a position that they have to talk to sales, and sales needs to talk to marketing all of a sudden. And it's, what do we do now? We've never done that before. But eventually that's what it's all about. How can we be as collaborative as possible with potential buyers by giving them everything they need along their journey? Because we don't know where they are in the journey, right? Yeah. That's like classical prospecting. It's like, yeah, I assume they could be here, and then throw a dart and just hope for the best. And so this post by Refine Labs, that was really spot on. So let's change the KPIs and see what we can do together. Not waste time, be more productive and effective.
What blows my mind, and I never knew this existed, because I've been sales since I was 14, starting in sporting goods and working my way up. Did you know that companies will spend millions a year on product knowledge and will balk at spending $1,000 on customer research? And most marketing teams have never met an actual customer or spoke to them in real time. Yeah. I just want to throw that out there. We're talking about like KPIs and exactly, like the reality of B2B. How do you have those conversations with somebody you've never met before? How do you earn trust with somebody that you've never stepped in their shoes, or you can't understand the jobs to be done that causes friction in their life?
Yeah. And you have to understand what is important to your buyer, what potential buyers, what do they think about? How do they feel about XYZ? Mm-hmm. What did they do in the past about it? And what are their objectives? What are they trying to achieve? And why is what they do right now not enough to reach that goal? And if you don't talk to your buyers, I'm just wondering, how does marketing do marketing without knowing all of that?
That's why I wanted to bring it up. It's one of those things, you know, they talk about those things that live in your head rent free and you just can't really get it out. That one's been living there for about 3 to 6 months. And I just can't wrap my head around the logic. It doesn't make sense.
It doesn't make sense. I feel it's really like a grown problem from how we started, let's say 50 years ago, with sales and marketing. And that actually didn't change. It hasn't changed that much. But the other side changed. The buyer side changed. With all the technology that is available right now, B2B is not that far apart from B2C, at least not from the psychological behavior.
Yeah, they're B2B still, depending on the industry. Certain industries have been, especially with COVID, had been forced to transform and get caught up. A lot of industries are still 5 to 20 years behind.
Yeah.
I'm sorry if anybody from manufacturing is listening, but you guys probably have the biggest opportunity of anyone, because access to all this information and data-driven decision-making could be a game changer. But yeah, it is interesting how buying preferences have changed, communication channels have changed, the brain has not changed, and yet we're selling like we did 30 years ago.
Yeah, and still hope for the best. But the thing is, you mentioned that you're not talking as much to, let's say, traditional salespeople anymore. And it's still fascinating that there is this huge notion of what we are doing works. There's this kind of cherry picking of little successes that kind of justifies the way it's being continued.
This is a hard, deep topic that when you get into sales, you get taught that you own your own destiny. And when you fail in silence, you fail in isolation. And so when you do not do well, it's not the company's fault, it's on you. And so I think a lot of this stems from the lack of teamwork and the lack of, what do you call it? They call it psychological security, or they can't talk. They'll get mocked. I remember being in Monday morning meetings and you talked about a customer asking something about pricing and they would just make fun of you. So you just stopped seeking help. You stopped needing assistance. You just suffered in silence. Mm-hmm. And so I think a lot of it is a lot of these salespeople, if they're money hungry and focused, they'll just follow the money, which leads to some bad behavior, because what you're judged on leads to the behavior, right? That's what they, the reward system. And I think that's, it's so ingrained, and it's not going to go away until sales changes their entire system. I was lucky because I started in insurance sales when I first got into my B2B world, and we were paid on retention, which was a game changer, because it wasn't wham, bam, thank you, ma'am, bye. It was, okay, is this a good piece of business? Should I place this business? Are you going to stay? Or should I just put this money into savings because you're probably going to cancel? But they took our money back. So if the company canceled in the first 2 years, they actually clawed back our commission and I had to pay it back. But wow. I think that changed my whole mentality. Like, looking back, hindsight being 2020, yeah. I think that changed my entire perspective on sales and really focusing on profitability and just good business, not just for the sake of sign here.
Yeah. And that circles back to what you said in the beginning. It's about a management change. It's about changing the KPIs and how you measure success, and also how you reward and incentivize your salespeople. If it's purely commission-based on traditional KPIs, number of meetings booked, then you have the Wolf of Wall Street, hunter and chaser. But I really liked that aspect of, we measure your success of on how long the customer stays. I think that's a brilliant way of really incentivizing to bring good business, long-term business to the organization. That's brilliant.
It was a tough adjustment after always getting paid up front, but it was good discipline looking back at it now. I don't know if I would do it again, but...
but that must have changed something in terms of how you qualified your leads.
Absolutely.
How you prospected them. So how did you adjust these little screws in your sales strategy then?
So this ties into how you're about to go into prospecting, and then we circle back. But I started looking at the value to them and making an assumption and building this value hypothesis. And then all I did is, instead of looking to see if they wanted to buy, and that was my qualification is, were they ready to change and did they see value in the change? And it was, this is why customer service outsells a lot of new business teams, because they actually see the value being realized by customers. That's why they make those recommendations on how to use your product, service, or that one feature that you don't talk about in your demo, because they've seen them get excited. They've seen them get mad, where a lot of salespeople walk away before that. So they're missing out on that, those tangible pieces. And so when I started prospecting, I started to look at what was the cost of doing nothing. And I started to build number values, and it is hard. I can see why most people don't do this, because it is extremely hard to look at a B2B company, look at an individual and price them based on the opportunity of doing nothing. And getting the right numbers for your formula that you can go and take to court, or go, you know, be able to back up if they go and ask you about it, because they always do. If I said that maybe buying this disability policy, I'm expecting, you know, if you ever got hurt, it's worth X. Well, if that opportunity cost is $100,000, but they're only going to get maybe $80,000 in value, don't place that business. It's not a net gain for them. But the thing that really changed my whole perceptive, or my perspective on this, is that it was perceived value. What is the perceived net value to them? And when you talk about business, it's on the account level and the individual level. And so you start with the victims. Who are the victims of nothing happening? Who is professional or personal success is being stunted by doing nothing? That they're angry. And oh my goodness gracious, are they a great source of information, because they will talk about it. And then usually the person that owns a P&L, they don't want to change, because they're the ones that bought, they're the reason that bought the paid in the first place. And so this is where I see a lot of prospecting go wrong. And this is what I learned from that whole process, is work your way up the P&L. Start with the victim, get that information to build that formula, to get that number, present it to the P&L owner, and then that's just good business. Oh, you're saying that if we make this change and buy your software suite, that's a $1.2 million increase with the cost of it being $300,000. So that's a $900,000 net growth this year. Kind of sounds like a no-brainer. Let's dive into that more.
Yeah, that's absolutely brilliant. I think that's not only the perceived value, but also you can back it up with numbers, which is especially in B2B is important because they, of course, we make decisions based on emotions, but also on logic. So we need to justify the investment for a piece of software or whatever it is. So I really like that approach. That's absolutely brilliant.
And every company has investments planned per quarter. It just depends on, is yours high enough value and priority to make it on the top of the docket or not? And you know what? It's okay for it not to, because then that means you are that trusted advisor where you're putting them first. No sales manager will tell you that, but that's what builds your reputation. That's what gets you out on social. That's what allows people to start coming to you. So you're no longer the machine that has to work day in and day out to make things happen.
And that's that moment where that added value comes in, that you're not there in that conversation to simply sell and close, but to think, does that make sense to the buyer? Does it make sense right now? Does it make sense in the scope that we outlined? And if it doesn't make sense, I think one of the most trustworthy things to a salesperson can do is, I don't think we're a good fit, at least not for now. So maybe leave it for now, to have that honesty to add value to the potential buyer and just be blatantly honest with them.
Could you imagine if you walked into your doctor's and you go for your annual physical and they're like, you know what? I think that you're due for some open heart surgery. We could go and make you bionic. I think we could probably fit you in 2 or 3 weeks from now. But because sales doesn't have a code of conduct, a governing body, it's never been recognized as a profession, which blows my mind. There'd be a sales manager pushing for somebody to do that because somebody's going to get paid. But what does a doctor do instead? They make observations and they point out what the symptoms are. So if they come up, they'll call them.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's been driving me nuts listening to a couple of the people that have been reaching out to me, and they're listening. Like, a lot of metrics right now are designed to punish. I think I posted about it the other day. You look at all these managers and they're so reactionary and they're firing instead of coaching because I don't think they know how. Yeah. Because everything's based on vanity metrics. You know, if you're tracking a few numbers and you're looking at pipeline, you're looking at opportunity to close ratio, and maybe you're looking at retention, and those can vary depending on how you're set up. But if your pipeline's too low based on your close rate, maybe we need to work on your prospecting. Oh, your opportunity to close rate's really low. Maybe we need to work on how you're navigating the sale, or look back at how you're prospecting, because maybe there's a qualification problem. But you can see this in advance when you're close enough to the sale or close enough to the individual and you're coaching the process. But I think this year, 2022, is going to be the year of the sales manager, where just showing up is not good enough and hiring and firing is their only job. They're going to have to actually coach.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's hard.
It is hard for several reasons. One, if you are used to treating the symptom instead of the disease, then that is what you continue to do. And if you have been told to treat the symptoms rather than the disease, then of course, that's all you know. And we circle back to a change in mindset, a change of attitude, and a change of an understanding to look outside the sales box and look into the marketing box and look into the buyer's box as well, and bring all of that knowledge and information together, and then sit down as a sales manager and say, okay, what can we really do? And not just tweaking a little bit here and there, but what would really make a difference that would really catapult us to the next level? You're absolutely right. That's what needs to be done in 2022. This is one of the challenges, I think, and one of the great opportunities at the same time, especially for B2B companies, traditional companies who have a chance to really stand out from an overcrowded market. So I really appreciate you mentioning that and pointing that out, that it is, there's more to sales than what we know, than what sales managers know already. So I think an open mind is very helpful to steer into the right direction and correct the course a little bit.
Yeah, even if we're looking at cost, make better margins. Demand gen, instead of doing a, you know, spray and pray, like cold call or like sales development motion, demand gen's probably cheaper.
Yeah.
And then do really strategic outbound. I don't think outbound's dead. I just think that somehow it became marketing and sales switch lines, and you know, SDRs are doing field marketing work and getting underpaid and not giving the resources to do it right.
Outbound is definitely part of the equation, but I would say done differently than what it used to be, and how we saw or have seen it actually still, what it can do. And you mentioned the cost involved in terms of what does an SDR do, what does a BDR do in terms of sitting down and doing, you know, the same things over and over again, cold calling. When you really look at the numbers without your ego involved, right? So take your ego, set it aside, and really look at the numbers, and then think about, is that really the most effective way of how we can use the power that's within our sales team? Is it really that you mentioned 100 calls a day? I've been through that, and I've been in sales organizations where sales reps were celebrated for breaking the record and making 200 calls and then 230 calls a day. And I was just, I sat back and thought to myself, something's really wrong here. that's not said, they can't be serious, but they were. So I think that kind of holistic view that you provide on your LinkedIn with your content and also your own podcast, to just drip feed that knowledge, that kind of medicine that opens up the sales managers' minds and leadership's minds a little bit to how can we do it differently. I think it's hugely important, and the work that you do is hugely important for sales.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. If you looked at my profile, you may have seen it. I can't remember if I took it down, but my parents actually never thought I could make a living at sales, and they still don't look at it like a profession. And one of my goals, one of my drivers, is to see sales recognized like accounting and law, because it's multidisciplinary, and for children to go and tell their parents they want to be in sales and for them to be proud.
Yeah.
You know, but there's going to have to be some fundamental changes that happen for that to be real.
Yeah. It still has that, the kind of notion of, oh, that's sleazy, or it's, you don't want to mess with that. It gets ugly and it's dirty and something like that. But, and that's a point where we thought about the ethical point or the ethical angle in sales. How can you transform sales into something that is ethical with doing the outbound, doing the prospecting, doing or leading the sales conversations in a way that is ethical, that is in line with your values, without being, you know, sleazy or salesy, or without ABC, always be closing. And I think I really appreciate you being at the forefront of that, because I think too that this is what's necessary, and this is what the market shows us, that this is what all the data implies, that this is what's going on the other side, on the buy side, especially in B2B. And how can we help and guide sales to just acknowledge that and then just tweak it in such a way that it maps how their buyers would like to buy?
I really appreciate that you bring up ethics. It's funny, I've been looking at a lot of cold like email sequences lately and talking about ethics. Why is it that so many salespeople, the first thing they put in after hello, insert first name, is I or we?
Yeah.
You want to talk about ethical? How can it be ethical if it's about you? Just if anybody can take one thing out, go look at your cold calls, look at your emails. Please, for goodness gracious, look at how you're using LinkedIn. And if the first thing you talk about is you, there's a problem.
That's wrong. I had a look at what was going on in the area of sales enablement and also buyer enablement. And I've both are absolutely crucial. But the one thing missing for me personally in sales enablement is the buyer. Where's the buyer in sales enablement? You know, we know that we can enable the buyer and give them everything that they need, so as much so that they make a decision to get in touch with us or not, or just give them all the information that they need to make a sophisticated decision. And on the other side, we can, of course, enable sales with new technology, with new ways of getting insights into buy intent signals or something like that. There's all sophisticated software out there, AI powered. All of that is still completely vendor centric and seller centric. There's nothing in there that benefits the buyer. I think there is a gap in the market. If you bring that together with, you said it, coaching, internal coaching, external coaching, whatever works, sales enablement, but also buyer enablement. And you bring that all together with management, with sales, with marketing, I think then you have a winning formula that is not salesy, it's not pushy, but it still generates a lot of revenue and a lot and drives a lot of demand. Mm-hmm. So if you only focus on one side of the equation, like the seller side or the vendor side, I think you're missing out on a huge opportunity. And if I may continue my rant, it's funny to me to hear a lot of sales leaders and sales managers speak about the sales cycle. All right, what does the buyer have to do with your sales cycle? Absolutely nothing. Is that interesting to the buyer? No. Does it help the buyer? No, not really. But it's, you know, we need to tick and check our boxes internally. It's like, not really. You don't have to. You don't have to. Just map it to the buyer journey, to how the buyer buys, all the stakeholders that's involved, all the decision makers that's involved, all the process and the procedures that they and the hoops that they have to jump through. And forget about the sales cycle. It's the least important thing for the buyer.
The whole reason we have a sales cycle is to close deals.
Yeah.
The whole reason that we sell is to provide value, or at least it should. My allegiance isn't to your investors. My reputation isn't based on your brand, but it could be. How disrespectful is it for companies to go and put a name on your back and then tell you to bark when or jump and expect you to listen, when really your job, if you took more of a customer success mindset, is to find value. You're a value hunter, a relationship builder, a promise fulfiller. But that's hard to track. That's why it doesn't exist. And the problem is, for a lot of this to work, you'd have to burn down RevOps. And actually, Smart, based in Calgary, Alberta, they just did an HBR article that was really good, that they broke down their whole RevOps by jobs to be done. No sales, no marketing, no customer success. I think the change is happening. It's just slow. And the problem is, the companies that can afford to do it are too big. The change management would kill them. And the small companies, like, you look at a lot of the ones that are in their Series A, B, and C, and they're going through this 100% headcount growth. And who dictates their growth? Venture capital and the KPIs they set on them. So at the end of the day, the only way we're going to go and have buyer centric is if the KPIs aren't about the companies. And how much money they're going to gain, which is ironic too, because if they started tracking profit instead of just closed deals, a lot of business isn't profitable.
Yeah.
It's just make work projects. But that's a topic for a whole nother day.
but that's a good one. I think that you're absolutely right. I think I hear part two knocking at our door sometime, because that's really getting into the nitty gritty things. But you're absolutely right. And I completely agree with you that the change is there, but it's kind of simmering away under the surface. But I feel that there is, it's like a magnet. I feel like it's drawing attention, and the right people are flocking around that. I almost wanted to say movement, but it's not a movement. I think it's really a change, a cultural change in sales, in marketing, in business, because eventually it just drips down from C-level down to sales and marketing. Mm-hmm. And that is also another topic we can talk about. How can you make the C-level understand that have just raised, I don't know, 25 million in funds, that there is something they could do differently in an ethical way, which eventually will provide them with a healthier business long-term, but short-term, explain that to your investors first. That's the tricky part.
It's a hard conversation to have. And you know what I love about customers? You don't have to pay them back.
Yeah.
I think it's like bootstrapping at scale. And the problem is, if you stop before you deliver on value, then you missed a huge opportunity. But if a lot of leadership could focus on that whole education process and look at how we make decisions and support that, and then actually be dedicated to making sure they see value. You know, the know and grow is real. There's a reason why when companies see real value in you, they tell everyone, and why social selling and word of mouth are the two most popular ways of growing a business, even though most people, like Chris Walker says from Refine Labs, most people won't see it because their software is telling them something different. Because once again, it's all about what you can track.
This year, 2022, in terms of social selling and prospecting, what would you suggest or advise to a B2B company or B2B sales organization who would look into these two topics this year? Where to start? Where are the pitfalls? What to expect? What not to expect?
Consumers have been taught to not trust sales. It's an epidemic. Social selling is our weapon to win. And if you put your customer first, you look at their jobs to be done, you look at where that friction's starting from, you help them make proper changes by not forcing them, but educating, you'll earn their trust. It might not take a month, might not take 3 months, it might take more, depending on your sales cycles in your industry. I've heard reports that indirect social selling, where you're not reaching out to people directly, can take 2 to 3 times your pipeline. So if your sales cycle is typically 60 days, times that by 2 or 3, and that's what it usually takes to have healthy, profitable inbound coming your way. Look at it from the customer's perspective. Go talk to CS. Where are they realizing value? Put it out there. You know, it's hard being an SDR and BDR when you've never stepped in those shoes and you've never seen the product work. So go talk to service, figure out how it's working. Work with marketing to understand what customer knowledge they have and put your own spin on it. Be that trusted resource first. And when you're reaching out, think about it. If you had a limit, you're only, you know, we're going to go back to the hunter status that everybody seems to be so enthralled with. What if you only had 5 bullets? LinkedIn caps you out at 100 a week, 20 a day, Monday through Friday. What if you could only shoot 5 a day? How would that change your approach to outreach? I would start to ask myself why, because I'd have time to do my research and I would handpick those accounts, not auto-generate a list. Look at the accounts that pose the biggest gain from working with you and the greatest cost is sitting there doing nothing, where it's a no-brainer that when you nurture them, proper nurture them, not just send them endless freaking emails and call it a nurture, but take them through this process that there's real value at the end of the tunnel. And do the work before. The biggest thing that has been driving me nuts is salespeople expecting decision makers and champions to figure out the value for them. What is the real value that you're proposing? Where are they going to see it? This is why it's so hard to get testimonials. Because if they knew, they would have already done it. That's why there's other stuff that's on the docket that's more important. So we need to slow down in order to speed up. We need to go and really quantify that value, build that value hypothesis, and be ruthless on testing it, and be willing to walk away when it doesn't make sense so that you can build your reputation and earn business in the future. And I'm sorry in advance, because it's going to be really hard with quota, or at least on activity metrics, but your pipeline will be healthy, and a healthy pipeline solves all things.
That's absolutely brilliant, Nick. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Well, you're welcome. I really wanted to have that conversation with you. I'll be honest with you. I wouldn't have accepted a no from you back then. But it's absolutely fun. You're brilliant. We're going to, of course, link your LinkedIn and your podcast in the description below. And thank you again for taking the time. And I'll see you on LinkedIn.
I will see you on LinkedIn. Take care.
Thank you for listening to the Sales Nation podcast. For free resources and materials, head over to honeycombagency.co.uk. If you loved this episode, head over to iTunes or Spotify to subscribe, rate, and leave a 5-star review. It's very much appreciated. Thank you.